Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. On this episode, we have a story about a bike trip, a long bike trip, across the entire United States, in fact. The person who took the trip is a folk singer from Portland, Oregon. His name is Joel Shupack, although he goes by the stage name Leo J. Joel had a dream that many of us share. A dream to get away from a life that wasn't filling him up. A dream to travel, to give himself space to think, to make sense out of things. And so, 3 years ago, he set off to follow that dream, riding his bicycle all the way from Oregon to New Hampshire. Lucky for us, he brought along his recording gear, and today he shares his story. It's a story about leaving behind a comfortable life at home in order to follow your heart. It shows us what a cross-country bike tour is really like, not just the glamorous idea, but the tough reality. And finally, it's a story about figuring out how to belong. I'll let Joel, or rather Leo J., take it from here.
I called it a cross-country bicycle-powered folklore pilgrimage. A mouthful, I know.
Oh, big, big world, here I come with my big ideas and my Tommy gun.
On the one hand, it was a music tour. On the other, a mission to find great stories.
My arms are brown, my heart is blue. Heaven knows that's the life I choose.
But really, it was about something altogether different. Something much more personal.
And I know it won't be long. I'll find myself among the weeds. No, it won't be long.
I lived in the attic of a cooperative house in Portland at the time. I had the perfect shoes, the perfect hat, the perfect beard. I milked goats, baked sourdough bread, and biked everywhere on a touring bicycle I had named Will. It was all potlucks and sing-alongs, clotheslines and clothing-optional hot springs. I had also spent the previous few years fashioning myself into a folk singer. I flipped around the letters in my name, so Joel became Leo J. I put in countless hours refining my yodel. It was just the kind of folksy life I imagined I'd want to lead. But something was missing. I couldn't shake the feeling that it was all a put-on, that beneath my flannel shirts and homemade haircut, I was lost. This wasn't the first time I'd changed my clothes and reinvented myself, or changed my name for that matter. What I craved was a deep connection to place. What I felt was rootless, disconnected, phony. I hadn't always felt this way. I spent my childhood in a rural pocket of Southern California, wandering through creek beds and eucalyptus groves, knowing every inch and secret of the land around me. But when I was 14, my family moved to Oregon, and I had never really felt at home since. Back in Portland, in my unheated attic bedroom, I'd wear sweatpants because no one was watching and listen to radio shows.
Well, you are a couple of damn liars. I just got off the phone with Mrs. McCreary. She hasn't seen you in weeks.
The stories on these shows captivated me. I loved the different ways people talked, each voice like its own rare wind instrument.
We thought, oh my God, she's talked to them. We didn't. Breathe.
A good story could be both intimate and mythical, all at once. I could do that, I told myself. I could make radio. If I couldn't feel at home with the world around me, maybe telling the stories of people who did would help me find where I belonged. And this is how I began to plan my escape. I would travel the country with an acoustic guitar and a microphone. I would share my songs and seek out stories of place. And I would do it all with Will, my bicycle. The slow pace would force me to see all of the places in between the places people usually go. I figured I'd find a certain purity out there and that deep connection to place I was looking for. Late at night, I'd pace the rough plywood floors of my room and imagine what was waiting for me in the wilds of the American backroads.
In a nation where more and more of us are losing our connection to place, I'm searching for local wisdom, provincial secrets, and the mythology of a modern age.
This is from the Kickstarter video I made to fund the trip.
The kinds of tales you can only find if you take your time, take the wrong turn, and overstay your welcome.
But early attempts to capture stories on tape were modest.
Are you recording all this?
Yeah.
Why? Just out of curiosity.
There's an off chance you might say something interesting.
Definitely off
nope.
chance.
Turn it off.
You're going to spend half your life listening to the other half of your life.
One of the first things I did after buying an audio recorder was to record an entire Thanksgiving weekend with my family.
Oh, that recorder.
All right, everyone be quiet for just 1 second.
This is me trying to get them to go around in a circle and say their first names.
Everybody's doing like, are you trying to like be difficult?
And that's my family. But all joking aside, deep in my chest, I knew I wanted to be a folk hero, a storyteller, a savior of forgotten lore. I imagined myself as Pete Seeger on a bicycle, proving that I could cross mountains with my own persistence. I wanted to know there was a finish line somewhere far off in the distance. A few days before I left, I tried interviewing a friend of mine.
I'm curious what kinds of stories you're hoping that I'll find.
But he ended up grabbing the microphone from my hand.
You know, if you were able to sort of...
You're about to head out on a journey on your bicycle. What are you most afraid of?
Oh, my bike falling apart, things being stolen, being hit by a truck. I'm also afraid that, like, what if I go and do this whole thing and, like, nothing happens. I don't make it, and there's no stories, and, like, there's nothing to learn, and everything can just be, like, found online. That would be probably the worst thing that could happen, is I find that there's no need for my project in the world.
It's the last day of May when I leave Portland behind. With Will, my bicycle. Every bolt is greased and torqued. Will is equipped with a front and rear rack to carry panniers full of supplies. Trailing behind us is, well, a trailer, carrying even more supplies, and my acoustic guitar. Lashed to the top of all that is a brown Pendleton fedora with feathers poked into the brim.
The Salvation Army and the Highway Police are passing around bottles of American Dream, American Dream. They're passing around bottles of American Dream.
I tie a dark paisley handkerchief around the stem of Will's handlebars as though he were a cowboy. My shoes lock into his pedals, my hands perch atop the handlebars, and together we sail on, balanced like acrobats, propelled by the gentle whirl of the chain threading gears. The road sparkles before us.
But I don't know what I'll find, what I'll find. Oh, Mother Country, be kind to me. Oh, Mother Country, be kind.
My mind is sharp and clean. Week goes by, and I'm in the desert of eastern Washington. It's hot as hell, with almost no trees to provide relief from the sun. The green I'm used to has been replaced with every miserable shade of brown there is. It's all wheat fields and badlands, with the occasional stunted sagebrush. I've hardly talked to anyone, let alone recorded anything useful. I blame it on exhaustion from the long hours in the saddle. But really, I'm just scared. I have no idea how to gracefully shove a microphone in front of a stranger's face. There's plenty of time, I tell myself. My joints and muscles are stiff and aching. I'm always running out of water and have to knock on doors or try anonymous spigots to top off in between towns. And half the towns on my map aren't even towns. Just boarded up storefronts and abandoned boxcars on a rail line that hasn't run in my lifetime. Sometimes the only sign of human life are the crushed cans of Olympia beer along the roadway. This is my dream, I tell myself, as I grind up another hill, one pedal and then the next. Just pretend the pain is pleasure, I think. A day south of Spokane, I follow a map to McCall Road, which turns out to be nothing but loose gravel. For a loaded-down touring bike, it's impossible to go more than a few miles per hour through gravel. The weight makes my tires skid and slip, and I topple over more than once. I keep telling myself that pavement will appear just around the next bend, but it doesn't. I crawl along like this for a couple miles. My water bottles are nearly empty, so when I reach a long, dusty driveway with a house in the distance, I stop. I lean Will against an empty wooden cattle pen and start walking towards the house, half expecting some crazed yahoo to come stumbling from the front door, wearing only an open flannel shirt and homemade boxer briefs. Instead, a young man and a young woman roar up on a four-wheeler. They're wearing matching Carhartt jackets and cowboy boots. "Get on," the woman says. She kicks the gas hard, whipping us around curves until we reach their home. There I'm led into a spacious brick ranch house full of immaculate 1970s furniture. "Ma, I found a bicyclist," the young man says. Ma is drying dishes in the kitchen, wearing a purple apron. They happily fill my water bottles. I'm hoping they'll offer to keep me around for a couple days to feed me hearty flapjack breakfasts and tell me all the secrets of the land. Instead, Herman, the family patriarch, offers to drive me and my rig the 12 miles to where the pavement starts again. Everything about Herman is round. His face is round. His gut is round. His vowels are round. We load Will in the back of his old pickup among straw bales and salt licks. I sit in the front seat. Herman starts the engine, shifts into gear, and begins pronouncing the essence of his being. "All I know is this land," he tells me. His family has ranched here for generations, and now, as he puts it, environmental types come down from Spokane, tromp around, and think they know what's best. I nod as he goes on and on, every sentence a gem, but my audio recorder is turned off, still in its plastic case on my lap. With one hand on the steering wheel, Herman drinks an Olympia beer in 2 minutes flat, then opens another. He offers me one, and I accept. I want to capture all of this, his battered straw hat, the suspenders he wears over a pastel striped shirt. He is so completely himself, so completely Herman. But I'm too afraid to move. Here is the purity I was looking for, and I just don't want to intrude. And suddenly, 12 miles have passed, and Herman lets me out with a handshake. I feel queasy from disappointment, and from the beer that I didn't really want. What am I doing?
I watch the sky. I walk the highways, but something says I won't see a red pickup again.
I play shows in Hood River, Spokane, Sandpoint, Missoula.
And you know I heard that you're doing fine.
Sometimes to a decent crowd, sometimes not so much.
Well, honey, I don't mind. But tell me, won't you?
House shows, cafes, dive bars, even a bike shop. When I'm not on the move, I spend most of my time scrambling to fill in my schedule with more gigs down the road. I send out booking requests as my fictitious manager. And I start to get more courageous with my recording.
Like I said, I have a crocodile. I have killed like probably about 6 rattlesnakes. What
is
I do?
It's all true.
Yeah, it's most of it's true.
Most of it.
Yes.
I overcompensate for my initial sheepishness by documenting every possible sound effect or conversation.
So this simple catalyzing motion turned into a huge ceremony that brought a light being, you know, into my womb in the future.
Let's back up a little bit, and can you just tell me your names?
Kwajayama.
My name is Tober Zara.
Can you... Those are unusual names, I would say.
Yes.
Here I'm at a city park in Missoula, Montana, interviewing a group of traveling mystics.
Yes, there may be children starving right now. However, I know that we're shifting into a higher place that will be infinitely blissful. And
afterwards, I wonder if they were just all on mushrooms. My instinct is to scoff at the Tober Zaras of the world, aligning themselves to some flimsy woo-woo spirituality. But at least they have something to believe in. And what can Leo J. say about made-up names? Remember when I had said that this wasn't the first time I'd changed my name and reinvented myself? Well, before Leo J., the folk singer, I was Yoli Lyons, the punk rocker. I lived in New York City, wore tight black jeans and a spray-painted leather jacket. And now, 1,000 miles from home, I don't know who I am.
Woo! Oh boy, oh boy!
After a month, I crossed the Great Divide at McDonald Pass. The Great Divide is a line that divides which direction water flows on this continent. On one side of the line, all water eventually drains into the Pacific Ocean. On the other side, like me, it's headed to the Atlantic. Of course, it's not quite that simple. Some rivers never make it to sea. They pitter out into salt flats or join lonely inland lakes that go nowhere at all. I do not want to be one of those rivers. From the middle of Montana to Minneapolis, I don't play a single show. There just aren't a lot of places to play, but I'm grateful for the break. Performing just once or twice a week is already wearing on me. I'm bored of my own songs and some of the stale banter I can't help but use over and over again.
All right, it's time now for a murder ballad. I think it's time for a murder ballad.
All right, I'm going to close it out with a murder ballad, like we all want it to hear.
This is my dream, I think. As I'm selling CDs and shaking forgettable hands, wanting only to rest and be left alone. After 2 months, I cross the Mississippi. The days start to mush together. I wake up with the sun in my blue tent. I sit up while my camping pad deflates beneath me. I make oatmeal and pack up all my gear. Will waits for me, leaning against a tree. He has accumulated several states' worth of dust and mud splatters. His neckerchief is beginning to fade from the sun. During the first hour of riding, I have to ignore anything going on in my body or mind. I've learned that it takes a full hour of riding before joy is possible. And even then, it is only possible.
And this is a bicycle story. Tell us about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing a...
In Viroqua, Wisconsin, a radio host sees right through me and expresses what I couldn't even admit to myself.
And is it working out?
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
It's wonderful to have a dream, but sometimes they have to be shattered.
That was it.
I would say that it's not... It doesn't feel exactly the way I expected it to.
My dream was being shattered all around me. I imagine these long hours in the saddle would feel a whole lot different. I imagined wide-eyed grace and deep, ponderous thoughts as I pedaled. But mainly, I just think about cheeseburgers and ice cream bars. Mainly, I just think in numbers. How many miles until the next town? How many miles per hour? How many dollars can I spend on cheeseburgers and ice cream bars? And I'm not finding what I'm looking for. The hours of recording are piling up. but I have no idea how to turn them into something, let alone something beautiful. I was sure I would fall face first into local traditions, that village secrets would be handed to me whole. Instead, I have nothing more to show than a sack full of snippets, like spare parts to a machine I'll never comprehend. I am certainly not the folk hero I imagined I'd be by this point. But maybe I could still find one good story. One good story, and this ridiculous ordeal will have been worth the trouble. Sometimes I wish I was home in my bed, three quarters asleep, the radio whispering headlines. I ride through the ruins of Detroit. My bicycle hung by hooks in the basement, the tires deflated. By the time I arrive in Cleveland, I'm practically despondent. And sometimes I wish all these memories lived in handwritten pages, neat on the shelf like history books. I'd look back on these days with a dizzying breath. I just want this whole thing to be over. To motion, glad to have toes on the earth. I performed that night at the Barking Spider Tavern, a funky brick building in a quiet part of town. After the show, a couple of 20-somethings in the audience offered to put me up for the weekend and show me around. As we make our way up a hill towards their home, they tell me about an annual tradition in their hometown. It's called turtle soup, and it involves bonfires, music, and huge pots of soup made from wild snapping turtles. It's in a week, and they invite me to come perform. Something about their youthful optimism perks me up a bit, and I begin to feel hopeful. Also, I begin to fantasize about turtle soup. I imagine the gathering off a rural road with no sign pointing the way. A soup pot bubbling like a cauldron, a carved wooden ladle dipping in and out of the broth, an artifact of a community intact. The deep connection to place I'm searching for. Maybe this is it. I follow the lines on my gas station map, trust in the grip of the blacktop. I spend a week riding along Lake Erie, with grease on my chin, gears rattle the load, through Amish country and past fields and fields of Concord grapes. The wind off the lake is brutal and cold. Sometimes I'm free as the wind, chasing my daydream. From ocean to ocean, yeah, sometimes I'm free as the wind, chasing my daydream. But I make it to Turtle Soup just in time. It's the last week of September. Will and I roll up to a clearing beside a creek. Several hundred people are milling about beneath a long wooden roof structure with a small stage on one end.
Thank you.
There's a table of potluck dishes, pasta salads, pretzels, store-bought pies, and homemade casseroles. But the main attraction is the soup. There are two enormous stockpots on a propane stove. A group of bearded, middle-aged men circle around it, as though ministering to the final steps of an ancient potion. Near the stage, a bluegrass band is tuning up, and a line is forming near the soup pots. I find my friends from Cleveland, and one of their dads sings me the Turtle Soup theme song.
Well, turtle days of mine tend to be so fine. Snapper summer fun, dancing in the sun. Drinking beer till dawn. When the soup is gone, we're gone.
Everyone here knows each other, grew up together. They sit around picnic benches, laughing over childhood memories of a science teacher who died years ago.
And I don't, is Mr. Petrosky still alive?
No, he passed away.
Or about the time the turtle soup went rancid.
The soup was bad. It was, you know, Boj and I both tried it. We went out in the back and puked. I mean, it was rancid.
Everyone here belongs. Everyone, that is, except me. I smile along to the stories, but I'm also wondering where I fit in. Mainly, it seems I fit in the soup line and lingering around the dessert table where I eat an embarrassing number of cookies. Before I take the stage, I spend the afternoon sticking a microphone into various faces, trying to capture the essence of turtle soup.
So what's the key to making a good turtle soup?
Butter. 12 things of butter. I mean, that's one of the things.
Not to mention imposing heavy-handed mythological undertones to everything I'm seeing. The turtle must perish, I write, so that we can thrive.
What's guys from the office just sitting around just going, doo-wop, doo-wop,
But later, on the makeshift stage, as I tune my guitar and look out onto the crowd, I realize something. Turtle soup? It's just a good party. Just a couple notches up from a nice church luncheon. These are people who've known each other their whole lives. No one has any use for my mythologizing. And I can't help but notice there's something very familiar about all of it. The fellowship built around shared meals, the memories told and retold. It reminds me of Portland, of the community I left behind.
The oompa-doo is like the main part.
Everyone will oompa-doo. Like, there's no question about the oompa-doos.
Oompa-doo?
Fill them in. Check them in.
I'm the closing act of the night, and I sing my songs joyfully, like they're old friends I haven't seen in a while.
Oh, my baby, it's been a lonely time, my lady. You climbed a ridiculous mountaintop lately. At the top, we were talking crazy.
It's October when I reach the ocean in New Hampshire. The state motto here is live free or die. I had always imagined the ending of my trip, even before I started. My hair and beard would be overgrown and sun-dyed. Worn tires would tear through sand, navigating past sunbathers on faded towels. Will would topple over, and I would scatter my clothes in a frenzied undressing to enter the froth and pulse of the Atlantic Ocean, wearing only my Pendleton fedora. With one definitive dunk and a guttural howl, my quest would be complete. I would calmly dress among the hubbub and enjoy a thermos of hot coffee. Authorities would be called. An oafish policeman would take me by the elbow. "What do you think you're doing, son?" he would ask. "Living free, officer," I would say. "Living free." Here's what really happened. I arrive like a battered bird to the town of Portsmouth. I dismount and limp my way to the sea, already catching the primordial smell of it. I walk to an outcropping of stone on the far side of a jetty. This is hardly the beach I envisioned. Masses of seaweed cover the rock like dirty shredded quilts, like the filthy hair of sleeping trolls. I go as far as I can go. It's not enough. I need to jump in. Someone needs to watch. I follow the rocky coast until I find a beach. There are no sunbathers. The wind is stiff and cold, and the choppy surf uninviting. I wait several minutes in case someone shows up, but nothing. I'm starting to shiver and losing my nerve. Like just about every other piece of this trip, my colorful imaginings are simply no match for the reality in front of me. I take Will to the shoreline and dip his front wheel into the scattering froth of the incoming tide.
At the shoreline, I'm halfway contented. I'm wholesomely naked with nothing to hide from the ocean Atlantic and nowhere to go but inside.
After all the rigmarole, all the miles and sore legs and unquenchable thirst, after all the thunderstorms, heat waves, and mountain passes,
I'm alone with the echoes after the show.
After every search for a good story that went nowhere at all, I have arrived.
They say no, that you know, but in hell. No, that you know.
party now. Know that you know.
There is no magic ending, no Eden on the other end. But over the course of all these miles, there is one thing I have figured out. I've realized that what I really want is to truly live somewhere. This whole trip, I was searching for belonging by leaving my home behind. But what I'm looking for can only really be found by sticking around. Connection to place starts with being in a place. And maybe the story I've been looking for all along is my own. Still, there is one thing left I need to do. This is my dream, I think, as I strip to nothing and run into the water. No hubbub, no cops, no one at all to witness but the scrappy seagulls. No thermos of coffee, no towel even, and nowhere left to go but home.
That was Joel Shupack, an independent producer and musician based in Portland, Oregon. Most of the music on this episode was his own, and you can listen to more of it at leojmusic.com. Additional music was by Blue Dot Sessions. I should also say that Joel just launched a new podcast of his own, which is largely inspired by what he learned from this bike trip. It's called Square Mile, and each episode is a poetic exploration of one square mile of space. You can check it out at squaremilepodcast.com. As we mentioned on the last episode, we're collecting stories for Mother's Day, and we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call and tell us about something your mother did that influenced your relationship with the outdoors. Or, if you yourself are a mom, tell us what you're doing to shape how your children interact with nature. The number to call is 800-599-2598. Again, that's 800-599-2598. And who knows, we might even play some of your comments on the air. Special thanks to Skip Cody, Alex Miller, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. Skip said, quote, "You've done such a wonderful job bringing these stories to us in a way that is entertaining, romantic, inspirational, and mentally visual. I now want to do a thru hike, hang with deer, go on a white-knuckle whitewater trip, and hang from a rope swallowing my fear of heights." Thanks so much for the kind words, Skip. We also had one donor who asked to remain anonymous. He said that instead of giving him a shout-out, we should use the time to request additional contributions. So I'd like to take a moment to do that. We understand that not all of you are in a financial position to donate money to causes you believe in, and that's okay. But if you do have the means and you think Out There is worth supporting, consider making a contribution to the show. 100% of our revenue comes from listeners like you, and we work hard to make that money go as far as it can. All of the money we receive goes toward covering our day-to-day expenses. Alex and I don't get paid at all. So we hope you'll chip in and help us out if you can. You can make a donation in any amount. Just go to outthereshow.com and click support. We also have t-shirts, tank tops, hoodies, and decals for sale at our website. Just click on the merch tab. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.